Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 268 of the Mighty Whites podcast. I'm Jack, as always, joined by KC.
How we doing?
Pretty good. I finished work 5 minutes ago, which is always good. So even by our standards, there is a lack of notes, but you don't really need notes. I guess as it's WrestleMania week, I should go. So KC, what's everybody want to talk about?
It's good. That's good. I like it.
We'll start with should we start with Leeds winning 3-1 against Hull?
Yeah, a wonderful game, delightful performance, and totally not nerve-wracking at all.
Yeah, it was a weird game, Matt, because it was another one of the, and I've said this about a few games. I think that we were worse to Leeds fans than we were to everyone else. Because, I mean, Hull, I thought, off the ball, looked more structured. I thought they pressed better. And then in possession, I thought they were tidier on the ball. And I thought they were definitely in charge of the proceedings for pretty much the whole match. But I do think that we probably created, like, nearly all the good chances.
Yeah, it's another one of those where you look at especially the second half, I think, where you look and just go, Hull have really dominated. What has Melier done here?
Yeah, because like they had the goal, which we may as well just talk about their goal now, as I've mentioned it. Ball comes out and they pick it up on the edge of the box and sort of dribble through the two challenges that are very weak. Cross into the near post and Cavallo makes a really good run across centre-backs and flicks it in. It's a good goal. But there's that, and then there are a couple of shots from the edge of the box that are pretty decent chances. But they miss the target. And in terms of real danger, that's it, really. They had some scrambles that scare you when you're in the ground, but they never actually got the shots away.
Yeah, it was very much more just them having the ball for long periods of time. I think especially after the equaliser, it then came up that Hull had it was like 60%+ possession for, I think it'd been like in the last 10 minutes or so. And you're just there going like, that just doesn't happen here.
Yeah. But on this occasion, it did. And they, like when you were watching the game, you did feel, especially in the ground, you very much felt like when we got in at 1-1, we felt pretty good for it. Leeds obviously started. They got the goal nice and early. Jorginho picks the ball up in midfield and beats three players and breaks away. Plays it to Somerville, who sort of attacks the goal, hits a left-footed shot. It's quite a good save that loops up in the air. And Sam Byram comes flying in at the far post to knock it in with his mouth by the looks of it. Weird thing of just expected behaviours from players and it being a crowd of bodies. I was sure it was Dan James in the ground that had done it. My dad was sure it was Dan James. I thought, oh, are we stupid? No, everyone around us was sure it was Dan James that had scored. And also the PR system wasn't working properly. Until a background noise heard Big Lee say number 25, Sam Byram. I went, oh, okay.
I mean, the position, like when you're sort of running 3 yards parallel to the byline. Yeah, you could rightly assume that was our right winger. But no, he was stood on the edge of the 6 yard box watching.
It was weird because on the celebrations you could see him turning around to look at the ref to check that is it definitely cross line? But I mean it was 4 yards over the line and got cleared into the side netting. I don't know what I think that shows that the Leeds pessimism permeates the players because it's so clearly in and they were still like until that ref points.
Yeah, it's yeah, because I mean I saw that and then when I saw Byram looking back I went, he's not done a Pat Bamford, has he? He's not just nipped it in with an elbow or something, has he?
No, you're talking
just,
you
know, ah. yeah, good. It was quite nice because like I just really enjoyed it, if for no other reason than I believe it's their left back, just I think it's Ryan Giles, just has no idea that Sam Byram's there.
No, it was one of them where there was clearly never a look over the shoulder, was there?
No.
There's one really good view on the highlights, actually, where it's shot from sort of quite far away. It's on the west-hand side, and it's shot from a distance. And you see Sam Byram start making the run so early, and no one reacts. And but it's one of those that you wouldn't notice it live. It's only when you're watching it back. It was It was good. It was good to see. And everyone's always happy when Sam Byram gets a goal. And then I suppose we should have sealed the game not long after. I don't know how long after it was. It felt like it was only about 5 minutes. Somerville played Dan James in like the left channel through. He squares it across, and I'm still not sure what Patrick Bamford did.
Well, he went for it with his left foot, is what he did.
Yeah, but even though he went for it with probably his wrong foot, it still wasn't difficult. I know Bamford does this every now and then, but I can normally tell what went wrong. I couldn't really tell on this one. It just looked like suddenly his foot turned into a pitching wedge and it just went up.
Yeah, if you're going to give him any sort of mild defence, it's that it was a bouncing ball. That's as good as I can muster. It's one of those where if he had any belief in his right foot, that's how you would have taken that. You'd have let it come across your body and tap it in, but he sort of ends up sliding sort of backwards.
Yeah, I think that he ran half a yard ahead of it, didn't he? And just sort of tripped himself up. But one thing that is great is, because this is something he's been a bit unlucky with, he's finally got away with one. Because it tends to be when Bamford has one of these moments, and he does do it every now and then, you just have to accept it. We always get punished for it. And this game was one where we finally didn't. Although for a long time, it felt like we were going to. I was quite happy with being level at halftime, given the flow of the game, although we had created more. And then in the second half, it was sort of more of the same for a decent amount of it. I've just checked, by the way, they did only have two shots on target, so we are right that they didn't have the amount of threat that their possession would suggest. But there was two changes made that I think made a difference. Joseph came on for Bamford, and he just put himself about and ran his arse off and probably should have scored. Leeds played some good stuff down the left, got Firpo into the box, who showed loads of composure, took his time, brought it in field, took every bit of time, put it on a plate for Matteo Joseph, and he just hit the post. Like, he'd back himself to score that every single time, and he didn't. But the thing that I wanted to... I thought that when Peru came on for Kamara, and he did do that thing where he's sort of playing in midfield, I thought he was much better in this game. I thought that he was a composed head whenever he got on the ball. And he just kept picking the correct pass. Even though it wasn't many times, he didn't get on the ball a lot, but every time he did, he led it well. And he was part of the sort of triangle of passing before Somerville wins the penalty. And it was excellent from Somerville. He just burns. Well, I don't actually know. I can't actually remember who it was now. It was that Slater, wasn't it, the right back? He burns him on the outside, getting into the box. And in the ground, it looked an absolutely stonewall penalty. And before I'd seen a replay, I knew it was because my Hull supporting mate from uni messaged me, and all he could say was, "What a stupid challenge to make." So he just took him out.
I think if you're being generous, you would describe it as a tired tackle.
Yeah,
it was just he's sprinting towards the byline into the penalty area. There's nothing you can do at that point. Just leave him. I don't know, that's sort of counterproductive, given it's a man running into the penalty area, but you're just asking for trouble trying to make any contact at that point.
Yeah, because he's nowhere near. It's not like Somerville's taking a heavy touch and baited him in thinking he can get to the ball. He's never anywhere near it.
No, he's not a Caton Hill's chance of ever winning that, and he just sticks a leg out, and you can see it on his face straight away. Of there's a very half-hearted appeal, and then it's Christ.
Yeah, and that was one of the other things I noticed. Not one other Hull player is like going, but not they don't look angry. They know that it's a pen.
Hmm.
And then we get the argument over the penalty, which I have changed my mind on since the day.
Hmm.
Not, I still hate to see it. It should never happen. But I assumed that Peru was the one who was on paper supposed to take it. And that Somerville had sort of given it the big I am and taken the ball. Because he is
big.
A bit...
You say big.
But he is a bit like that, isn't he? Like,
well, when asked after the game, his response was, yeah, I was feeling good. So... You're like, that's not how penalty taking works, my guy. That's not how that works.
And I do hate to see an argument over a penalty taker because there's already so much pressure on it. I don't think it doesn't help to put any more on. But Farker has since come out and said, like, if everyone's playing, Peru is the number one penalty taker. But he doesn't like someone taking a penalty if they've only just come on and not been on very long.
Hmm.
And he said, normally when he brings Peru on, he'll say to him, if there's a penalty, it's you. And he didn't in this one. So it was still Somerville. So Somerville was actually in the right on this, which is probably why Ampadu pulled Peru away.
That right there is a lot of middle management communication going on in a football match.
Yeah.
yeah, I think the thing I'd be happy, or was happy about, was...
That he scored?
Well, that as well. But I think how quickly Peru kind of went, all right then.
Yeah.
And kind of walked away from it. You know, didn't kick up a stink about it. I think he said his piece. I'm you know, not at all surprised if he is unhappy about it because...
He's a
striker. He wants to score goals and he probably wants the extra couple of grand that goes into his wages when he does. But yeah, Somerville scores, centre keeper, one of those penalties. It's a great penalty because the keeper goes the other way. It's a dreadful penalty if he doesn't.
From when I watched it, I think the keeper's gone early enough that Somerville's seen it.
Hmm.
I don't think he's just gone, I'm going down the middle no matter what. I think he's seen him go in and just...
But it's just... It's low. It's not far off centre.
Yeah.
It's one of those where you're just like, you could still put it in the corner, though.
Yes.
Just a bit more.
But yeah, it was massive to get that goal because it had been a struggle. And obviously, earlier in the day, Leicester had won against... They'd gone 1-0 down against Norwich, but they battered them. Norwich scored after 10 minutes, and I think the words of my dad were the best way of doing it. You'd have thought they'd have scored in the 93rd minute. The way that they just went and camped on the edge of a box and did nothing. And then Ipswich scored a 97th minute winner against Southampton is that their 48th or 49th stoppage time winner this season? It's amazing because they've only played 40 games, but I'm sure they've got at least 49 late winners.
They've been actively conceding goals in stoppage time to score a winner.
Yeah. They just, when you do it this many times, I am refusing that. I'm not calling them lucky. Because if you do it this many times, it's not luck. It means that you're fitter than everyone else and you don't give up.
Ah, I was going to go the corruption route. But yeah, sure, that as well.
I have seen mostly people being ironic saying, oh, they're clearly on loads of performance enhancing drugs. The problem is, in the last week, I've seen a couple of non-ironic.
You know how Wolves fans were on that thing of the Premier League are trying to get rid of us, we just can't figure out why.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ipswich.
Yeah.
The Championship are trying to get rid of us, we just don't know why.
Yeah. So 2-1 up last minute. He doesn't make the changes straight away. He does chuck on Anthony for Somerville and Shackleton for Byram. Byram had looked knackered since the hour mark, and it came out afterwards that he was knackered at half time and was really struggling to get about. And then later on, there's a Hull corner. They send everyone up, including Allsop in goal. Gets headed out, gets crossed back in. Joe Roden makes a really good header. Jorginho Rutter just needs to clear it. And for the first time all season, I actually lost my rag with Jorginho, despite him being my absolute favourite. Because I don't care how creative you are, it's the 95th minute. Just fucking clear it, will you? But he goes to dribble out, gives it straight back to him. But he, even when he fucks up, still leads to a goal, because that's how good Jorginho is. Roden with a good block. Peru plays the correct pass, puts Dan James away. And a really good finish from... I keep wanting to say 45 yards out because of where it is in terms of the halfway line, but because it's wide as well, it's probably 90, over 50.
95.
But it's a cracking finish. And from where I was lucky enough that my seats are like almost directly behind it. So I hadn't outstanding. As soon as he hit it, you knew it was in.
I was going to say, like, yeah, the line for that must have been pretty good because most of Ellen Road was not so confident. There wasn't much in the way of cheering before it hit the net. So I think it was only a select few who had a good view of where it was going.
Yeah.
Really, I think really big for him. Obviously, the disappointment with Wales, followed by not a great performance against Watford. So I think that'll do him the world of good.
Yeah, definitely. And just put the seal on it at the end. And with how tight it is, given the gaps in goal difference, you don't think it's going to come down to that, but you never know. So having the extra goal won't hurt. But it had a feel at the end of the game as it... I'd go as far as saying it felt like we got away with one. Even though, apparently, like the XG of the game was like 2.5 to 1.5 in our favour. So we sort of, in the end, were value for it, but when you were watching it, it didn't feel like it.
Yeah. Like I say, it's just... I think a lot of it is down to being in a relatively unfamiliar position of watching a team dominate possession so much against us. I can't say I was massively pleased with the Gray Kamara partnership, but I always thought you were always going to be missing either Ampadu or Gruev there.
Yeah, this is what I was worried about and why I thought putting Ampadu into midfield was the right thing to do. And then Watford game proved that to be incorrect. The balance just wasn't quite there. And I thought Kamara, he was tidy enough, but he was overly negative again, which you do see sometimes with him. But you didn't see the best of Gray at all, which was actually quite sensible, seeing as it sounds like Real Madrid were there watching him. So, you know, good time to not have your best day. So, in the end, we deserved it. But yeah, that midfield didn't really click. I thought back on the game, and I reckon Firpo was about best player on pitch.
You're probably not far off, to be honest. I think I said to you afterwards, I think you've probably got to give a lot of credit to Hull's front three, almost, because I think they did a very good job of pressing in.
Yeah, I still can't figure out exactly what their front line was, because it looked like it was a two of Carvalho and Toufan, but Carvalho seemed to see a lot of him, and I didn't really seem to see Toufan at all in the game. The wingers, that number 50 whose name I can't remember, and Philogene, they seemed to give us quite a few worries.
Yeah, I just thought they were very organised for the majority of the game. I don't think I could put them on Leicester's level in terms of putting centre-backs under pressure. But I thought they did a decent enough job to that we were giving away possession a bit more than we normally do.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. But it's a really good win. And it turns out we've had another good win this week. Last night, with Leeds' under-18s beat Millwall 4-3 at Elland Road. 10,000 there by all accounts. There was two own goals in the end. goals from Reece Chadwick and Charlie Crewe. Reece Chadwick, what I've seen of him, it's too early to tell, but I think he's going to be a good player. I really like him, and I like that McDonald that's been played on the left as well. He was sort of the lesser. I think we got him and that Lewis Pirrie roughly at the same time, and Pirrie was sort of the headline of the two. But from what I've seen of him so far, that McDonald looks pretty good.
Nah, it's really good to hear stuff like this. I know
first time since '97 that we've been in the Youth Cup final.
I was going to say it's a decent company to be in with. You know, just football being what it is these days, I don't quite expect that team to go on to be what the Leeds United first team was within the next 2 or 3 years. But if there is a Johnny Woodgate in there, I will take it.
The current front runner for that would be that, is it Ruben Lepatawhite?
Yeah,
he sort of seems to be the main man at the back. He looks all right. I didn't get to see the game last night. I did watch the quarterfinal when we got through, but I didn't get to see the semi. I've just seen the highlights since. But currently, the provisional date for the FA Youth Cup final is Saturday, the 4th of May. There's some stuff on that day. But, I mean, it's already drawn. Because they do a draw at this one, so we're away in the final. Away at Manchester City.
I would say play it at neutral ground, but Valley Parade is an absolute bog of a pitch. So,
yeah
probably not.
Just play it. I suppose it. I haven't checked what Man City's fixtures are around that time. I assume that they will... I mean, they can put it on that training ground pitch because that probably holds 10,000, doesn't it? But they're at home to Wolves on the 4th of May. So it's either going to get moved to a midweek and played at the Etihad, or it'll be played in like that training complex, you would think.
I would call this poor planning.
Yeah.
Now I appreciate...
I would really quite like to go to the Youth Cup final, to be honest.
I fully appreciate that it's a cup competition. You can't necessarily plan for who's going to get there. You can certainly plan for Premier League games being on, though, and Championship games, and think, you know.
Yeah, I think that officially, although at the moment that's the provisional date, I think it must be played by the 4th of May. So I think they will organise something. Hopefully they can do it with enough notice that... Because, like, getting over to Manchester isn't too bad. Hopefully they can just give people enough notice that it might be able to get sorted. Because you would bet that there'd be quite a lot of Leeds fans wanting to go over for that.
I'm coming up with an idea right now. And I already think this is genius. I think you play it the morning of the FA Cup final.
Yeah. Before the FA Cup final.
Yeah. Midday, 1 o'clock kickoff, something like that.
Yeah. They can't put two on the same pitch in the same day. Well, they do with like the FA Vars final and that would make sense.
I wasn't even thinking Wembley necessarily. I just thought you make it a bit of a, you have the FA Youth Cup and the FA Cup final on the same day. And maybe you televised the FA Youth Cup final.
I think it will be on some... I mean, it'll be on the FA's website. I don't know if it's on TV.
I'll say it now. If Eurosport don't show it...
Sky will.
Yeah. I think in this case, Channel 5 will.
It is a really good achievement. Rob Everington becomes the... Because 93 and 97 were both Paul Hart, weren't they?
As coach, yes.
So Rob Everington's only the second one to get Leeds there. And obviously, Man City's academy has such ridiculous facilities and has had so much investment, including in players. I assume that we're going to be heavy second favourites for this. But it's still it's an excellent achievement.
Yeah.
And you never know, if we're already promoted by then, fuck it, we'll let Archie Gray play in FA Youth Cup final. I don't think we will already be promoted by then, but he's eligible.
Yeah. He's eligible for about another 4 years.
Speaking of Archie Gray, he's been nominated for Apprentice of the Year and Young Player of the Year in the AFL Awards.
I assume he wins one of those.
I think he might win both of those. The three nominees for Player of the Year are Somerville, Smodix, and Dewsbury Hall.
Interesting include. Like, I know Sammy Smodix had a very good season. It's just, there is something about those top four teams where you are looking going, Leif Davis, though.
Yeah, it's like Ross McCormack when we were shit. In a way, it makes it more impressive.
I mean, tough to argue with the division's top goal scorer and then two of the best midfielders in the division.
Yeah, like, obviously I'm going to pick Somerville, but I think all three, I can't argue with them, and if any of them won it, it's not an unreasonable thing to say.
Yeah.
And then the three managers that have been picked out are Farker.
One of these managers is not like the others.
Well, you know, Daniel Farker, who has obviously done a brilliant job with us, especially given how in the shit we were in the summer and how stressful it all was. Kieran McKenna, who, if we're all being honest with ourselves, should win it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Liam Messina, who I am a big fan of. I really like Liam Messina. But
this came out just after the game, and they have dropped to 10th.
Yeah, and they haven't won in six. Like, if
it's a very odd timing.
I'm quite a big fan of his. I think he's going to do really well, and will move up in the game. But this season, saying he's done overall a good job, I think is completely fair. But to put him in the top three, I'm less sure.
I mean, if you're being entirely honest, it probably should just be the top three managers, should it not? Like, unless there is someone who is doing, like, the one you would say, there's normally one manager who you think is doing an exceptional job and that his team is performing above where they should be. That team just also happens to be top of the league right now.
Yeah.
You know, normally they're like seventh. But they were relegation fodder.
Yeah. Or you'd have the two up at the top and someone would have Rotherham all equivalent in like 11th. And you go, no, that's as big an achievement.
But Gary O'Neill is my Premier League manager of the season. Because for where they were with a week to go before the start of the season, they've got a very good chance of qualifying for Europe. Also, it's a horrible, horrible prediction on my part now. But at this point, I want them to do well because I'm so far off.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of as I look through the championship. Hull finished 15th last year, so you know they're better than they were. But it just didn't quite seem to fit. Like, West Brom have been the best of the rest the entire time.
Mm.
Like, there has been a very comfortable gap ahead of them for the top four and beneath them. Like, they've fairly comfortably stayed, you know, fifth, sixth the whole time.
Yeah, and I mean, I suppose the other thing is, because it gets awarded before the end of the season, it could be just wrong 3 weeks later, whoever wins it, really. Like, I mean, if you get to the end of this season and Coventry get up from seventh into the playoffs and, like, make the FA Cup final, all of a sudden, and, like, maybe they get up, maybe they go up in the playoffs and get to the FA Cup final. And then you're like, well, it's probably Mark Robbins then, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, it's weird that they give out all these awards before the season finishes. I know all the players want to fuck off on holiday, and rightly so. But it just seems odd that the awards are done before. The news-wise, there's the Middlesbrough game got moved to the Monday, and now the following weekend, the QPR game has been moved to the Friday night. So we've gone from having two away games, a week apart, which would be absolutely fine, to playing two away games, one of which is in London, in 96 hours.
What's your point, Jack?
Sky TV is something. I can't remember. Look, there's a lot that were saying, oh, God, physically, I don't think it's that. It's just, it's not ideal for planning, because I think it's far more mental strain at this stage than it is players being physically tired. I think the players from all the teams are physically tired. It's how you stand up to it. So I don't think it actually makes that much difference. What it is it's a bastard for any Leeds fans that are going, who've now got to go down to London Friday night.
Famously easy to get back from on an evening is London.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's an 8 o'clock kickoff, so game will finish. Stoppage time and stuff, game's done at 10. So if you get lucky, you're getting home at 2 a.m.
Trains are cheap then as well.
Oh, yeah, and trains famously cost fuck all.
Only 85 quid.
Yeah. It's just shit. Also, that game is now on the 26th. It got announced today. I'm sure that they said 6 weeks. Notice.
It's different in the running, mate. It's different in the running.
Yeah, rules don't matter anymore.
No.
It's fucking stupid.
Like I said, these are the same people who only a week and a half ago moved the times for the last day of the season. Like, they're fucking idiots.
Yeah, I mean, they could have literally done that one on the opening, before the opening day of the season.
Yeah. The fixtures are out, and we've moved all the final day to 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
There you go.
From Farker's press conference, everyone who played against Hull is available except for Jamie Shackleton, who has the new in vogue injury of an adductor strain. Gruev is the one with a chance. Roberts and Nonto are definitely out for like at least another week and a half, 2 weeks. But Gruev are just waiting to see the level of pain and the swelling in his ankle, and then he might be available. But the way he was talking, I'm leaning towards he won't be.
Just go over there, show me your ankles, and just go, no, mate, that's a swollen ankle.
Me going,
get,
no, mate.
I'll get on that pitch.
Ankle.
That's a cankle.
Yeah. I mean, we really could do with Gruev back, but I am going to work under the assumption that he isn't for now.
Yeah.
So, Coventry away on Saturday, 3 o'clock. Well, we should probably mention the other ones because in terms of order, the day opens with Ipswich away at Norwich at 12:30.
The old farm.
Yeah, the old farm derby. Ipswich are obviously better than Norwich, but Norwich did get a draw earlier this season away. I think it's something like 15 years since Ipswich have beaten Norwich. So by the time it happens, it'll be 15 years and 95 minutes when they score the winner.
I don't even know how Titus Bramble scored that last minute header against Norwich.
I don't know exactly what it's going to end up. It's definitely not a game where we've no chance of getting a result go our way. There's definitely a chance. But I mean, Ipswich is 7-5. I've already backed that once, I'll probably back it again before kickoff. How much hope and stock are you putting in Norwich?
Oh, very little.
Yeah.
If they adopt...
But obviously, they do need a result just as badly as anyone there in sixth.
If they adopt similar tactics to that they employed against Leicester, I hold out very little hope for them.
Yeah. Fair enough. Still in it, but currently four favourites of the four. Southampton away at Blackburn at 3.
I
could see Blackburn nabbing a point in current form, but I'd still fancy Southampton.
Yeah.
And lastly, Leicester at three are at home to Birmingham. I would be absolutely fucking amazed if Birmingham get anything out of that.
I'm kind of on board the train of Birmingham going down at this point, purely for how stupid they were at the start of the season.
Yeah, they're only 2 points above that, though. Yeah, 42 points. It has slightly separated out a bit of this, actually, since last time I looked. It's still tight. But Sheffield Wednesday 39, Huddersfield 40, Plymouth 41, Birmingham 42. And then there's a little jump, 44, 45, 45, 46, 47. It wasn't long since that like everyone 12th and down looked like they might be in with a shout of going down, and now it's sort of 17th and down.
That's one thing I have missed. Rotherham won.
Oh, yeah, they won away at Millwall, which if they didn't win, they got relegated.
I mean,
they're still going to get relegated, but they had that week's stay of execution.
We were, me and Alex Bedison were doing the maths on this. What are they? As I look there, what are they? 16 points from safety? No, sorry, 18 points from safety with six games to go. So,
yeah, it was. They've also got a 39 worse goal difference. So they are actually down.
Oh, no. If they all of a sudden fly.
They are actually down, but they're just not officially.
Like Bournemouth levels of, well, you're gone, aren't you? And then just, no, Brett Pittman is going to save us.
I'll tell you, Michael Brown just sent us a message here, something I didn't realise about the Norwich Ipswich game. Norwich have won 7 consecutive home games. They haven't lost at Carrow Road since November, 3rd in the form table.
Ooh.
I still think Ipswich will win, and I still think it'll be a late goal, but that gives me a little bit more hope. And then on to Leeds, who are away at Cov. Cov are 7th, obviously chasing the playoffs, all kinds of things to play for. They also have a game in hand on Norwich and West Brom, so they're really, really in with a good shout. Obviously, they've made the FA Cup semi-final, they're a good team. This is the sort of, like, I have been worrying about this one for a while. I mean, I'm not going to go back any further than this, but looking at their last six games, they've won. One of them's the FA Cup game against Wolves, obviously, but that was full strength teams as well, so we can sort of use it. They've won 4 of the last 6, although they did get beat at home by Cardiff last time out.
It's one of those teams that I look at, and I don't think there's anyone massively standout, but it's just a well-assembled team.
Yeah. Ellisson is a handful for any centre-back at this level.
Yeah, I think there's a reason why at the end of last season, Sean Dyche thought he's going to be my striker for a while. Because I think he just saw a big lad who can bully people about. And he's done pretty well this season. Hadji Wright's done pretty well.
Yeah, he'll probably play from wide, but he's another, you know, strong. He's not a great finisher, despite how well he took that goal against Wolves. But he's definitely a good player. That Callum O'Hare that sort of plays 10, he's good. That Milan Van Ewijk, who I think they've been playing him as a winger at the minute, but he can also play right back. People who watch a lot more of Coventry than me keep saying he's really good. Ben Sheaf in midfield's pretty good as well. Bobby Thomas is the centre back that scored the equaliser at Elland Road, didn't he? And he'll be at the back with Liam Kitching, who, one, is quite a good player, and two, will have something to prove because we let him go.
And in his last game, scored 2 own goals.
Yeah, so he'll definitely have something to prove. Jake Bidwell has been a good Championship left back for at least 25 years at this point. they're expecting that Latabodia to play right back. He can play a few different positions. He was at Man City, I think, when he was young, and he was quite highly rated. And Brad Collins is a good keeper. There's not any real massive holes in that team. And as much as all else, obviously, as much as is no one's favourite. Matt Robbins is doing a really good job with them.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing with them this summer. When you lose your front two like they did, it could have all fallen to bits. But no, they've invested well. Like I say, they've just assembled a good team.
Yeah. He's not expected to start based on this, but we've got Casey Palmer as well, and he's got history of playing well against us.
Yeah. It's one of those where, again, I think we've done it a few times this season. I don't think there is anyone in that starting lineup I would swap for anyone in our starting lineup. But they will be a tough team to play against.
Yeah, they're a good side. My home, I don't know how many exactly, but I know that they haven't lost many home games this season. Obviously, they did last time out, though. Assuming no Gruev, because I think that's the safer way to do it. Will it just be the same team, do you think? So, Melier in goal, Byron Roden, Ampadu Firpo, Kamara and Gray, James, Jorginho, Somerville, Bamford.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd be surprised if it's anything other. Because, I mean, he said Byron's available because he was not at his fittest by the look of that last game. But you wonder about where he is. But Shackleton's unavailable. If you moved Gray to right back, who plays in midfield?
I think... There is every chance that Watford may well have just been a one-off. But at this point, from now till the end of the season, I just want to see Ampadu and Rodon at the back.
Yeah. The only way that would be a debate is if Strauch was fit and he's out for the season. So until the summer, it's not even a discussion point, is it really now?
No. It's very much a, right, let's make the best out of, I think it is, make the best out of Gray and Kamara until Gruev is back.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for it happens a lot. This at the end of the season, you come to a team news and there's just no debate to be had. You know, pretty much unless there's an injury or someone coming back out of nowhere, you can be pretty sure what it's going to be. I have had the predictions sent in. Alex has gone for a 2-1 win. Connie's gone for a 2-0 win. Hate to do it, but 1-1 draw.
I am also going a 1-1 draw.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I hope we're wrong. And I hope Connie / Alex is right. I've had this one down in my head as because I've been thinking for a while, like, well, there's gonna be games where we drop points. Like for instance, I didn't have Watford away down as one of them, but I did always have this down as one.
Yeah, and like you say, you're kind of looking at them now. They're still pushing for the playoffs. Well, they're seventh, 4 points behind Norwich, so they have to get a win.
Yeah. And with a game in hand as well, so it sort of puts them in charge if they can get a result.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's every chance this might be one of those games that could be a good point.
Well, I don't think any away points other than, like, you know, we drew away at Huddersfield and we drew away at Rotherham. They were shit away points. But for the most part, away points aren't bad. But yeah. Again, a lot depends on what happens in that early kickoff. A win is massive no matter what those results are, because it just changes the reason it's massive, whether it's to give you a lead or keep you there. But if Ipswich were to drop points, all of a sudden a win, you're like, God, this is a fucking chance here. And it's going to be a fairly quick turnaround, because after this game, we will have Sunderland next Tuesday. Yeah. Because then on the Tuesday, Leicester away, Millwall, Southampton at home to Coventry. and Ipswich play on the Wednesday night at home to Watford. Because this league is... And this is the title that I put for the stream. This league is relentless.
They don't stop coming, and they don't stop coming.
Ipswich got promoted, and they hit the ground running.
I mean, obviously, we'll get to the Sunderland game. You kind of want to get a decent result out of this, and then I've got to keep reminding myself, Sunderland aren't playing that well.
Sunderland, in terms of current form, I was basically as bad as anyone.
It's you know,
I know they won one game, but it's in about 8 or 9.
Yeah, it's not going to be the Sunderland team we came up against in December, who were starting on that decline, but still had it together.
They had manager bounce, didn't they, when we played them?
Yeah. I think like we should be able to beat Coventry, but it's very like say it's tough coming up against a team who's just well drilled, has played with some consistency now for a while. And playing at their place.
Yeah, they've had a manager doing a consistently good job for a few years. They've got loads to play for, both in terms of the league and in terms of wanting to impress so that they make sure they're on the side at Wembley.
Yeah.
It's a tough game, this. The only thing that I'm hoping is that maybe the players might have half an eye on that FA Cup semi. Which, if Coventry were 11th, I'd think that they would be like that and I'd be a lot more confident about this game. But they'll be well up for this. It'll be a tough game. But hopefully we can come out of it. I think with Leeds playing again Tuesday, it might well be that Sunday is the best bet.
Probably, yeah.
We have to be back. So, yeah, we'll probably be back then. But hopefully we can come out of this with a win. If others drop points, maybe we can really be in a confident position. Maybe the Leeds not to be promoted price will get even bigger so that we can all back it and have something to fall back on if it all goes tits up. So, I've been Jack, see ya.
I've been KC, have a good one.
In a bit.